percentage of, it's a deal that's being worked on with our president and Hydro-Quebec. So in addition to that, you have the general stabilization or lowering the market price of energy, because what happens here is that if you put this power into the market, okay, let's picture a jug, and you need 10 units of energy in there. What happens and how the price is set is that first person could bid into the market, many people do, at zero cost, like a nuclear plant may bid in at zero. They're going to bid one unit. You then add in for the next day's market, people say, I'm going to give you 1 cent a kilowatt hour, two, three, four. And when you get to the top and fill up this jug, the last one in determines what the price that everyone will get for the day, okay? So by putting in 1,200 megawatts at a very low level, you displace the higher guys that would be the last in. So it's going to have a tendency to lower the overall market price for energy in a on a daily basis.
So even on a customer of it's going to lower the price.
And I got to be careful when I say lower, you know, because it will have a positive impact to lower the market price for energy.
But what towns are going to really benefit by getting the lower
price? Everyone will. If it lowers the market price of energy in the region, everyone will share in that benefit. But in addition to that, we talked about the purchase power agreement that PSNH would be looking to secure. So it has a regional benefit on the price of energy.
And anybody who's in the market to buy energy can buy this energy. PSNH is negotiating a long-term agreement to buy a portion of it. The remainder will go into the mix. So, it's available for everyone.
And our rate doesn't change on a daily basis like yours. Our rate stays the same. You guys will make money off it.
Okay, let's keep it in order. Sorry,
Scott, go ahead. I was just staying with that same point.
You love your chain.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Okay. The conversations I've had with other people that have been to some of these information meetings, they stated that probably 10% of the power that remains in New Hampshire, the bulk of everything that's being transmitted to the state is going to end up in Southern New Hampshire.
10% value, I can't comment on that. As I said, the deal with purchase power agreement has not been secured, but the energy could be used anywhere in the region.
So, but we're going to impact the entire state of New Hampshire as far as widening whatever has to happen to extend the transmission lines. There's no guarantee that the state of New Hampshire will actually benefit from the power at this point.
But we will benefit. We will get a block of power, plus also identify that the regional cost of energy will be lower because of the project coming in.
But we're only affecting the state of New Hampshire as far as the transmission goes.
That's correct.
And when you talk about the region, how big is the region?
New England region.
Yes, ma'am.
New Hampshire people like straight talk. Mm-hmm. They're not really going for this, big words and the beating around the bush stuff. I just wanted to show this poster of transmission lines in scope. And just to say, you're talking about public participation in these matters. Isn't it true that although you can voice your comments, none of those comments actually go toward making the governing, the actual governing decisions about whether to come, where to put the line, and who benefits from that? Because I think most New Hampshire people in this room understand Hydro-Quebec and the other utilities benefit. New Hampshire people and our land are the sacrifice, and it doesn't take a genius to figure out that our power expenses are not.
If you hold that up, that is an example of the structures associated with this project are not going to look like that. That in many cases, those tall structures are out there. I don't know what voltage class that is. So on both sides, there's some, we're trying to defend and identify what the facts are. I think we've been very clear of what the structure heights could be, not just here, but in the North Country. As far as the benefits, there are many benefits associated with the project. We talked about the taxes, we talked about the green energy, we talked about those, and as far as the permitting process goes, you know, I feel that this, the DOE, the New Hampshire, will give individuals, towns, the opportunity to provide their input.
But we don't have to actually vote.
That's correct. That's correct.
Ed. You just mentioned tax benefits, and there was a slide earlier on it. I saw the word new in front of right away a lot. If I understand right, the lines are going to run in existing right of ways in Chichester, if it runs through Chichester in the proposed areas. So are those numbers for tax impact based on new right of ways, existing right of ways?
Let me be clear. This is the existing right-of-way, this is an alternative, and this is new right-of-way.
Where is that?
Are there already power lines running through that?
No. It does not exist.
It's your house.
People's yards.
But the tax benefit is the slide bank said new, what the new meant was the new structures, whether it's new right-of-way or existing right-of-way, these new facilities that are going to be in the right-of-way will add the tax benefit to the community.
Steve.
That was my question, the word structures. So that the transmission towers are the structure that would be taxed?
You tax everything. You tax.
The property's already taxed.
From a standpoint of what would be added to the town's tax base, it would be everything associated with the line. It would be the development, the permitting cost, and those would be averaged. If we have X amount of dollars for engineering and permitting, those would be split out along the line route. But you'd have the easement cost, you have the foundation structures, construction, all of that would go into what it took to put the line in. So everything would then be added up and go into the tax base. Just because the structure might cost a small number, that's not the value that would go into the tax base. It's what takes that structure, wire, line to be installed, including the permitting cost. So let's say it took $1,000 to permit the line, and there was 100 miles of line. Well, you take that $1,000, $10 per mile, it would then go into each linear mile so that all the other costs to develop the project would get put into the local tax base, not just the structures.
Frank,
yeah, I actually got a few questions. Okay. The first question. You said that this would be primarily hydroelectric power.
That's correct.
Won't be
hydro. It's about.
Let me take that. The Hydro Quebec system is 98% hydro. This project does not consist of an extension cord right up to a hydro facility. The project involves connecting to an existing substation of Hydro Quebec. That from that point, we're getting what's called their system power, but that is 98% hydro.
The remainder is primarily wind and
nuclear. We're not connecting directly to a hydro plant, it's to an existing substation.
With respect to the FAA permit, we talked in Pembroke in January. You still don't know the status of that, or is there any update on it?
Yeah, but we did get information back on the 9 points that were submitted, okay, and talked about getting down to, looks like we can engineer the process down to this point. It's from this junction out to here that we need to have additional discussions and analysis.
Well, does that lead to another alternative route? You've got 90% of the way, let's say 80-90% of the way. If you couldn't, I mean, it would seem you now have to engineer from the point down by the river, pardon the expression, up through Pembroke. Would you now create a new alternative route?
Probably not. I can't see that we would be able to bypass the issue of where the grade just goes up here, the grade's going to go up here, and you have to go in this direction. So there isn't anything on the alternative route from that point that really makes a lot of sense to be able to resolve it, to use, I should say.
We're trying to resolve that now?
Yes. We're going to put out to the community aviation committee. It's called the circulation. So yes, that is our next step to take us from this point to where we get out of the ceiling of the airport.
On that right of way, that right of way is jam packed. There are three transmission lines.
Two transmission lines and a distribution line.
Okay. And has any thought been given to relocating one of those so that this line could go there and then be lowered?
Sure. But that's part of the process. We are looking at, it's not just putting the line in this corridor. If we took one line, moved it, what does that allow us to do? So all of those tools in the tool bag we're looking at, all the engineering possibilities are being evaluated to get through there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. First of all, my name is Ray DeMonte. I'm an attorney from Hawk. I represent Frank and Patricia Humphrey. Can I make some comments in addition to some questions?
Keep it brief.
Okay, thank you. First of all, some questions, Brian. Thank you for coming this evening. Brian, I found to be very factually oriented and as accurate as possible in these things. But Brian, you've said some things this evening that have been new in the discussion. One of them is that the towers are going to be 80 feet in height coming through Chichester. That's the first time I've heard that. Through the entire discussion about Northern Pass, there have been 135-foot towers, 1,000 feet apart. So can you clarify that?
Correct.
Because even our first discussion in Pembroke, at that meeting, they were not 80-foot towers. We brought up 135.
It all depends.
And said that's possible.
It all depends where you are. Let me talk about the structure range that there is. In our Department of Energy, I hate to keep on referring back to that, but there's an awful lot of information there. There's two different sheets that were issued, and it was one for the AC side, up to Franklin, and Franklin North to DC, and identify a family of structures. What is the range of structures? What could they look like, and what would their size be? For the AC on that sheet, it was 80 to 135 feet. For the DC, it was 90 to 135 feet. And there is an issue with...
So AC is this power here?
AC is here.
80 to 135.
Correct, yep. You know, in Pembroke, where you have existing right-of-way and you have only an existing line in there, you don't have a clean 150-foot to construct. So in some cases, if you have the wires that are horizontally configured, if you don't have a wide enough right-of-way, you would maybe then have to put them in a vertical configuration up and down from one another. And that would drive you to the higher structure heights. If you have existing anywhere along the line, if you have right-of-way widths that are not limited, you could put for the AC, we call it an H-frame structure. It's a wood structure, and its height is approximately 80 feet.
Okay. Now, let's talk about that. As it stands, the new right-of-way that you're talking about through Chichester is... doesn't exist, it doesn't have anything in it. So it would be unrestricted in that sense. But if you look at the Northern Pass literature, it talks about rights of way being 150 feet to to 430 feet, depending on topography. So we're going up over Plaza Hill, Garvin Hill, and that's what you, that's what your literature says.
Yep,
right?
Well, let me tell you what this says.
Well, first of all, that's what it says, right?
410 to 150, but if I can qualify that statement, I'll, what that said is that from the Northumberland down through the project, our existing right-of-way widths vary. Okay, it could be 150 feet, they could be 200, they could be 225. The widths of our existing right-of-way vary to 410 feet. That's the only focus that that statement was making. It said, along that route, we have varying widths of right-of-way, have varying numbers of lines that are in those rights-of-ways.
I'd like to have you take a look at that language, because I think it said, depending upon topography, you may need a wider right-of-way. Is that a correct statement?
It's two separate statements.
Okay.
The first one is the existing right-of-way widths vary along the project route from 150 to 410. Okay. And then as a general statement, if you have the wires in a horizontal configuration, you would need a wider right-of-way. If you had the wires in a vertical configuration, then you would need a, you would have a narrower right-of-way, but the structures would be taller.
Understand. Now, there's been a lot of questions this evening about the benefit to New Hampshire, the lower power cost to New Hampshire, and the benefits, how much power is New Hampshire going to get? When this project was first announced, the answer from Northern Pass was, New Hampshire gets no power, period. That's in writing. Subsequently, there's been a little tweak to the presentation, and that tweak is that Public Service is now applying for a power agreement. They don't have it, and in fact, in about a 5 or 6 inch thick application for, I think, to FERC, there's one footnote that says Public Service is applying for, I think they said 200 megawatts, but whatever it might be. Early on, New Hampshire was getting nothing, and that was.
I'll have to disagree with you, because the concept of a purchase power agreement has been there from the start for PSNH.
I'll share that language.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll share that language with you.
But as far as, that's not something new that has evolved as the project has evolved. That's always been the case, where the negotiation of a purchase power agreement, specifically by PSNH, has been in the project from day one.
And I want to go back now to the route through Chichester, which until a couple weeks ago was the preferred route. And if you don't solve the problem at the southern end of Concord Airport, where you have that constriction, it'll be back to being the preferred route. And until it's gone, we're concerned.
Agreed.
Until it's gone, we are under siege in terms of that area. If it's even 150 feet wide, this is going to be 150 feet wide scar across Plaza Hill and Garden Hill. And I think everybody here knows what they're looking at. And Mr. Chairman, I want to talk about tax benefit, because frequently, in fact, in every community, it's mentioned that the cost will be $2.5 million a mile on the average. It'll vary. And that'll be the tax base. And you're going to realize tax revenue, increased tax revenue because of that. In some small towns, those small towns, it's one of the biggest developments they've had, and will have very significant impact. But the concept of tax revenue is not just a single number or a single concept. That line, once it's up, once it's operating, the line owners are going to contest their tax assessments. There's nothing that can be said that can assure you otherwise, except that if you look nationally, that's happened. Once the lines are up, they come back to the towns, they ask for abatements in their taxes. And it's not the typical abatement where, you know, your tax assessor understands what a house is worth and can handle it. There's really some specialized technical issues involved here that require each town to get high-priced specialized people to try to defend their tax position. Each town, having done that, is going to be faced with either agreeing to give a abatement in tax, or facing a lawsuit from the owner. that's going to be costly and burdensome for the town and will frankly reduce, if not eliminate, some of the benefits. More important than that, this line won't be adding any kids to the schools, so there will be a justification under the pilot program for them to come forward and say, we shouldn't be paying any of the school portion of the taxes, we're not adding any kids to the schools. So we want a special agreement that eliminates, as far as we're concerned, any payment for the school part of the taxes. More than that, and this is part of the overall formula that I think Chichester should be concerned about, is that the properties that are taken are going to be reduced in value. If there's 135 foot or 80 foot towers going 150 feet wide, going through a piece of property, going near homes, those properties are going to be reduced in value. So in the first instance, those properties are going to have a reduced value and they are going to be getting a tax abatement. Secondly, those properties that aren't taken but can see the antennas and the towers, they're going to be impacted in view of their in part of their view tax. Mm-hmm. Chichester is blessed with incredible views. I mean, there's parts of Chichester where you can see 7, 8, 9 counties. You can see Maine. Those views are incredible. But if you're looking at 80-foot towers in those view taxes are going to go down. So there'll be a reduction in your view taxes. The properties that are located, not taken for the rights of way, but are located right next to them, will also have a reduction in terms of their value. So we've got those issues. When you start putting those all together, there will be not just $2.5 million increase assessment in the town of Chichester for the line, but a very significant reduction. And that reduction, if you look at it, reduction in your view tax, reduction in property taxes for very severely impacted properties, and those properties that just frankly are not taken but have a reduction because they're nearby in their value, that could offset the situation tax-wise in Chichester, so that you don't have any tax benefit whatsoever. In fact, that if that were to occur, everybody in this room and everybody in the town of Chichester that is not impacted and thankfully won't have their property values go down, will have their taxes go up because they have to make up for the shortfall in those taxes. You folks know Chichester very well and much better than I do. And I just want to point out to you some other factors that you need to think about. When you go over Plazaway Hill and Garvin Hill, you're looking at some very significant, very well-protected conservation property in that area. I mean, the Dryman's home, for example, is one of the jewels of the Plazaway Hill area with conservation land around it. It will be encircled by these towers and this scar. More than that, there are many other properties. Properties on Garvin Hill, Garvin property, Dane property, other homesteads up there, Flanders property, those properties are likewise going to be impacted. Now, when they did their initial analysis, Northern Pass said, well, they had a list of historic properties, but they only looked at those, I think, that were on the historic register. They didn't list a single one in Chichester. But you know what's up there. You know what's on that hill. You have a very significant number of properties that have historic consequences. Somewhere between Plazaway Hill and Garvin Hill, right where this line is going, it's splitting, it's going between the Dryden property and that is under conservation, and the piece of property that I think the town of Chichester owns that's under conservation. So it's going right through that narrow corridor. Right at that point, history I read from Mr. Sanborn, I believe that Mr. Sanborn or people that he knows found an Indian encampment. And they say it's between Plazaway Hill and Garvin Hill. That's it. That's where we are. It's a very significant historical thing. It's out there somewhere. It's a series of stones that were the basis for a meeting house. This hasn't been taken into consideration. Going through that narrow area between the Dryden property, the conservation easement, and the conservation land that's owned by the town of Chichester is putting under threat this particular property as well. And there's numerous other factors in the town. One of the big factors is that this, I think you said 1,200 megawatts can serve a million households. Well, that's more than a million people then. Let's say 2 million, 2.5, 3 million people being served. And yet, if you look at the impacted, the potentially impacted area of Chichester, that potentially impacted area of Chichester is at most, in terms of takings, a dozen or so properties. In terms of impact, another 40 or 50 or 60 properties. Chichester is being asked to take a huge disproportionate burden of impact, of cost, of damages, and to get almost nothing for it. If you lose your view, you don't get it. As a property owner here, you don't recover from PS&H. If they put lines near you, they can be seen from your property, but they don't touch your property, you don't get anything. You just lose your value. The people in the town of Chichester are being asked to have a disproportionate burden on their shoulders to allow this to go forward. In something that Public Service has said, the revenue in the future, I think around 5 years or so after this is up and running, the revenue that will be realized just out of this line is $1 billion a year. $1 billion a year revenue. And yet, in response to Joe's question, they can't bury, and it's not a mile. It's probably a tenth of a mile to a quarter of a mile. They can't bury that little bit with $1 billion worth of revenue on this line. I think the request to bury part of this line along Concord Airport is a reasonable request. I think the threats to Chichester, not just my clients and the other few people that are taken, but the entire town, is real. I think the factors that have been considered so far by Northern Pass have been very much incomplete. Historical Indian artifacts, there's actually endangered species of plants and so forth that also should be taken into consideration, and other factors that need to be addressed. Chichester is impacted very significantly. It is being, as I said, asked to take a disproportionate burden of impact, and all the taxpayers are going to suffer accordingly. One of the social impacts that has not been discussed is the reality of health concerns. Now, there's a lot of dispute. Some people say, you live near one of these lines that's this powerful, there could be health problems. Others say there can't. I've seen pictures where if you put fluorescent bulbs in the ground under one of these power lines, they light up. That should be reassuring. I've seen pictures of the insulators on a moist day actually brilliantly lit up. I've been told that under right conditions, the property nearby will hear the humming of the electricity going through those lines. People believe there's health impacts. People believe that they don't want to live there, and that will further drive down value in your town. Some of these properties could be decimated in value. I've been told, and I haven't got my hands on it yet, so this is the ultimate in hearsay, but I'm told that there's a study in the Midwest somewhere that says property that is impacted nearby can go down anywhere from 40 to 60% of its real estate value. Think of what that does to your tax base. And in some cases, if it's close enough and it's impacted enough, it has no value. It's property that cannot be sold. That is a serious, serious impact. So
okay, I'm going to have to cut you on. I think you made some really good points.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I was going to say, so I thank you for giving me the opportunity to say this. I think that the town should be concerned.
Oh, absolutely.
And I would urge Northern Pass to do everything to get this line back into the existing right-of-way. And if they along Concord, and if they do that, and it takes a tenth of a mile underground, please do it. And then I want to close by saying one thing. You know, a lot of people accused of being NIMBYs, not in my backyard. Don't put this here because it's going to be in my backyard. If they do what I say, If they move it back to the existing right-of-way, they will put it in my backyard, because I own the land under that right-of-way in Concord. I own Shaw's. I own several other of those properties. I am sitting here saying, Northern Pass, put it in my backyard so that you don't impact the beautiful hill, Plaza Hill, Darwin Hill, and the people in Chichester. Thank you.
Thank you. Walter, did you want
to? Yeah, I'd like to say something. You brought up the question of how much savings that'd be for us around here. Now, to me, you're coming 140 miles through the state of New Hampshire. You're ending up at a distribution point about 30, 35 miles from Massachusetts line. Then you're going to the distribution system. How much benefit is the state of New Hampshire going to get compared to what could back in the Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island? And another thing, public service company in New Hampshire and Eurotel are in the business to make money. Now, if they can buy electricity cheaper, they're not going to sell it to us cheaper. All the time, we get brochures from them to put in energy bulb, buy energy this and that. And all the time, we do that to save energy. Then the paper comes out and says, Eurotel wants to up on their prices because they're not selling as much electricity. So if they don't sell as much electricity, they're going to charge us more for what we do you. Now that's a fact. I've lived here for 90 years, and I've never seen my light go down. When we started getting electricity years ago, you paid so much a kilowatt, like 4 cents for 200 kilowatts. If you went over to 400, 250 kilowatts, the next 100 kilowatts was 3 cents. The more you use, the cheaper it went. Now, the more you use, it stays the same price. So things ain't changed any better for us. I know that. And it was, because nobody's going to give us a break. They're out to make money. That's their business. Any power company.
Go ahead.
I'd like to ask about your comment on eminent domain. You said there's going to be no eminent domain. How do you know?
I didn't say that. What I want to make sure we're clear on that. The eminent domain process goes like this. We first will do everything we can if there is a right-of-way section, easement section that's needed to negotiate with the landowners. If we make every effort and we do not come to an agreement, the only way that eminent domain could be used, I use the word could, is after you get through the siting process in New Hampshire, if the site evaluation committee determines that this is in the public good, then at that point, if that eminent domain were used, it would be a process that would go, you would go through the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission. So that is the process for eminent domain.
And if you take land, for instance, on my property, you'd be taking, I don't know, about 100 acres. You just take, even if it comes like within 200 feet of your house, you don't include that. You just take the strip.
It would be the easement area.
That doesn't seem quite fair, does it? Supposing it were your house.
Okay, I want to give everybody an opportunity, the gentleman over here.
I just have two kind of questions. On the route that goes down by the airport, you said that you've been working with the FAA on trying to work through that process. Are you saying that it's probably going to be at least 2 months down the road before you get approval from the FAA?
Let me make sure I'm clear on that. When we work with the FAA, it's a series of submissions that we make to them, and they will provide information back. In October, we sent in data requests for the 9 slots along the path that I had showed, and we got information back, identified that in much of the area, we thought that we could put the line in underneath their ceiling, and we have that little corner plus the hill sure. that we need to then go and do some additional work, additional submittals to them. That would take a few months to run through that next step.
Okay.
Okay, and then they would come back to us with their findings. Now, it was also clear that these are just the 9 points. Once the and they would identify the most severe points, the pinch points that once we get information on those, and then the detailed line design is done, every single spot where you put a pole, you then have to formally go in and do another evaluation, obstructions evaluation.
Okay, so then it would be safe to assume that while that process is going on, during the course of this summer when the environmental impact statement draft is being created for all the other alternatives, those aren't going to be put aside or taken out of the presidential permit application because you won't have any approval from the FAA. Is that a fair assessment of that?
It could be.
Meaning they're all going to go simultaneously through the whole process, regardless of the getting an FAA approval, because there's no real timeline on knowing when that's going to happen.
That would be a fair assessment, and you know, we would get information back from the Department of Energy on the scoping meetings of what they want us to look at.
So even if by some miracle you had an approval from the FAA in a month, not that I'm expecting that, but even if you did, those other alternative routes wouldn't come out of that application. Those would still remain in there.
Again, we will do the follow-up work based on what the DOE tells us to do. I can't tell you what they're going to direct us to study.
Well, I mean, as far as their application. I mean, as you know, presidential permit application, there are other parts of the right-of-way with this existing right-of-way mm-hmm. that does not have alternative routes.
Correct.
And if for some, you know, bizarre reason, the whole process with the FAA went quickly, and you have, and you could go on your
existing route
that you already have, with those other alternatives, which right now are you know, first alternative and second and third, would those be removed from the presidential application permit
if
in an
we,
amendment, so if, that the focus is mainly on the existing right-of-way, or not?
If we did amend the presidential permit to say that the route in the existing right-of-way is our preferred with the statement that we had to study with the FAA. If we came in a short amount of time and said, our 9 points are positive, we can work our way around that, we would then formally identify that to the FAA, excuse me, to the Department of Energy through the presidential permit, say, here's an update. I can't tell you then what they would say, okay, this either comes off or it stays on. They may look for data collection or analysis on the routes that we've shown up here as the preferred normative and alternatives, or they may ask us to look at something completely different. I don't know what that is, and it will be determined through their scoping process and follow up.
But just to emphasize one point, as we get information from the FAA, just as we've already submitted one addendum to the filing saying that we want to look at this area, if we get more information from the FAA, it's very likely that we would submit another addendum to the current application in order to make sure that DOE is clear on what our preferred route is.
We understand the sensitivity, and I started the presentation by saying that the goal of the project is to place the line within existing right-of-way. That makes the sense. And we're doing everything within our power to move that goal forward. And we're working very hard to identify engineering solutions and to get through the, it's a process. I've used that word many times tonight, but that's what it is with the FAA.
Okay, we'll take a couple more questions.
On your map, can you show me, point out which is the proposed route for Chichester?
Sure.
think your packet.
You have it in the packet.
There's quite a good map in the packet, so everybody pick up a packet.
Everybody will have a map in the packet.
The proposed route through Chichester, let me back up. Our desired route, I don't want to mix words, but I want to be very clear. Our desired route going through the airport issues is not in Chichester, it's through the existing. Okay, the alternative is this section right through there.
Do you
want
to maybe put the Chichester map,
look
to just the Chichester map?
It's showing West Clark Road.
There you go. It's the same drawing, just in a little bit different scale.
So it's the red line at the red line right there. You can see where Route 4 comes through there.
Yep. See where West Clark Road is? Mm-hmm. Show them that. There you go.
Does that make it
faster?
Yes, ma'am.
I actually have two questions. I have looked at your website, and I could not find your investors. Do you have a list of your investors who's backing this project?
The project is a partnership between Northern Pass Transmission, which is Northeast Utilities and NSTAR, and the other partner is Hydro-Quebec. Those are the three partners involved in the project.
And then there are individual investors in each one of those organizations.
Well, like Northeast Utilities, there are hundreds of thousands of stock owners.
The second question I have is, we received our letter because our property is one of the properties impacted directly. And it was ambiguous. Why wouldn't you want to meet with us?
Okay, you want that one or you want me to
talk? Sure.
I need a break.
I'll tell you, he needs a break. And, you know, the process, and again, keep in mind that for the Chichester situation obviously is very, we're looking into the existing right-of-way in the Concord Airport. But in the meantime, because we need to proceed to gather information on...
Landowners got letters, and you know, it's a little challenging to explain the relationship between what's happening in Chichester and the FAA Concord Airport, because we wanted to make that clear that the route in Chichester is, you know, paralleling the process to look at the existing right-of-way in the Concord Airport vicinity. So while things are proceeding, since the looking at these routes is going to go in parallel, whether it's the Concord Airport or whatever alternatives we look at, we need to gather information. And so the process is to notify a landowner that they may be on the potential proposed route, and then to contact and meet with the landowner to talk about what the process involves in terms of gathering environmental data about the property, where exactly the existing or the proposed right-of-way might be going, because there's all sorts of analysis and evaluation that would need to be done in order to obviously figure out and design a final route. So ultimately the process is the homeowner gets a letter, and then someone, a representative from Northern Pass, would contact them afterwards and talk about exactly what it means for the homeowner, what information we'd be looking at from the homeowner and need to gather relative to environmental issues.
Okay,